Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Money Talking from WNYC. I'm Charlie Herman. We often talk about politics in the workplace. For example, you and a coworker talk about how, let's say, Joe got a promotion, not because he's really good at his job, but, you know, politics. You want to believe that wherever you're employed, if you do good work, work hard, you'll get ahead and get that promotion and a raise. I know it's an attitude that I've had, but you and I, we also know that sometimes that's not the case. Well, maybe the first thing that we need to consider when talking about politics is that's not the right word. It's more psychology. And if you can understand the underlying reasons for why people are behaving in certain ways in the office, you might better understand how your company works, and that in turn might help you in your career. With me is Tomas Tramado. He's a professor of business psychology at University College London and the author of the Harvard Business Review article, The Underlying Psychology of Office Politics. Thank you for joining.
My pleasure.
So what are the psychological impulses that make people, quote unquote, political at work?
It's two main things. The first one is that, you know, as the great Dale Carnegie once said, when dealing with people, you have to remember you're not really dealing with rational creatures. You're dealing with creatures of emotions. And therefore, even if we have facts, data, and situations where we could be objective about something, our emotions get in the way, and therefore things become very political. The second one is, of course, that, you know, in any organization, you can talk about the things that are the functional do's or don'ts, the things that should be happening for the organization to become more effective. At the same time, you have individuals who are trying to achieve certain things for themselves. So this tension between selfish agendas and what's good for the organization creates political situations that people must navigate in order to survive.
So as an individual, then how do you figure out your way to navigate through what you've just kind of outlined?
I think it's important to be aware of the dynamics. You know, these are the things that will not appear in your job description, in your contract, or on the company websites. You know, nobody reports how political they are. But when you have been working there for a few months or maybe a year, you really understand what those invisible forces of power are. So you can't, you know, people often think, oh, I'm not political, as if it's an ethical thing to do. You can't ignore it. You are part of it. So being aware of what's going on is the first step. And the second one is to play the game within reason without becoming only a political creature, because then it's self-defeating, at least for the organization.
I find politics are really hard to understand, especially when you're applying for a job, because you can talk to people and they can describe to you how office psychology, how it all works, and yet you really don't understand it until you're in the middle of it and experienced it, and then you get it. Is there a way to decipher it more easily?
I think, you know, that people definitely differ in terms of their ability to decipher this. So, you know, there's been a lot of talk in the past years about political savvy or savviness. I mean, to what extent can you read these dynamics and be aware of the power interplay between different people? So, I mean, you have to pay attention for it. That's rule number one. Rule number two is you have to try to put yourself in other people's shoes and understand what people might be trying to achieve. And actually, it's quite interesting that the people who are best able to do this, they tend to be very skeptical and often very Machiavellian. So we don't want to encourage these type of profiles or behaviors in others, but that tells you that the lesson is don't believe everything you hear, don't be too trusting, and try to think about the different possibilities. You know, it's a little bit like playing chess or poker. Yeah,
it's a little bit depressing to hear you sort of talk about the workplace a bit like that, to be aware of what you're being told and where it's actually coming from.
Well, it's the reality. You know, maybe in 100 years or 20 years, robots will take over from us and they'll be less political. But at this stage, it's just us versus us.
Well, in your article, you talk about these three basic workplace relationships that may actually be evolutionary based. Can you walk me through those again?
Absolutely. So, you know, we know from not just psychology but anthropology that at any point in time, I mean, any manifestation or kind of version of human civilization, there have always been three fundamental needs or master motives that drive human behavior, okay? The first one is to get along with others. I mean, we can't live in isolation, and human life is only possible if we're living as a group. This created our bonding instinct, and, you know, we want to connect with others. I mean, we find it warm, enjoyable, and pleasant, and that's true also for our work colleagues. The second one, though, is our desire to get ahead. We also want to compete with other people, and these two needs are often in tension. So, you know, we want to get along, but if we get along too much, we can't compete. We want to compete, but if we're only competitive, that harms our ability to get along with others. And the third one is our need to find meaning, understand the world, to be able to predict what other people might be about to do, or to be able to predict our own future. So these three goals, getting along, getting ahead, and finding meaning, exist at the level of culture, but also at the level of organizations. Any individual who needs to have, or who wants to have a career in an organization, needs to master these three things. They need to get along with others, they need to compete with them, but they also need to find meaning. And the meaning will not come from the stuff that is written in the formal guidelines of behavior in the organization, but it's really the etiquette, the implicit rules for social interaction that come from the politics in the organization.
I'd like to hope, and maybe some of your experience has shown, that the companies that are most successful are those that have a culture where those three traits are in balance. Please tell me that's true.
That is true, absolutely. You know, the more individuals feel that they can get along or achieve and accomplish things, and the
have
more
the ability
meaningful
to get promoted, to do more things and do quality things that matter in their life.
Absolutely. All these three needs drive higher levels of employee engagement, which in turn drive higher levels of productivity. Furthermore, we also know that organizations where employees feel that the politics are not that toxic, that strong, also tend to perform better. So whilst it is impossible to completely eliminate politics from organizations, if you're too political, you self-destruct.
So are politics inevitable in a corporation?
They are, absolutely. I mean, put two or three people together in a room and there will be some politics there. And so this scales up substantially when you're looking at organizations of hundreds or thousands of people. That said, organizations should still try to keep the politics at a minimum, because otherwise they interfere with the very things they need to do to grow and achieve.
So who's responsible for doing that, for creating that kind of culture?
Senior leaders create culture in an organization, okay? But this takes, it's not a matter of hours or days or weeks. It takes months. And you know, they are the main providers of meaning to the rest of the organization. They have a vision, they have a sense of direction, and they really are responsible for kind of highlighting what that DNA is, the core values of the organizations. Now, then it trickles down. So every manager from senior management to middle management has the responsibility to communicate and transmit these values, this set of principles, to the rest of the organization. And there's often such a mismatch between how the CEO experiences these things and how the most junior employees experience these things. The bigger that mismatch, that gap, the more political the company is.
So how do you learn to balance what you want to do, when you want to do it, the way you want to do it, with the fact that you work for a company that might have other ideas for you and wants you to go in a different direction?
You know, living in the world, I mean, it's only possible if we can find a compromise between what we want to do as individuals and what other people want to achieve. And this doesn't happen naturally. You know, Freud famously said people are like hedgehogs in the winter. Hedgehogs in the winter, they get cold, so they need to get close to each other, but then it becomes a bit prickly and they sting each other with their spines, so they need to separate again, but then they get cold. So this tension between the optimal level of distance that we can handle with others makes it quite difficult to live with other people. And this is why leadership is so important, because leaders are responsible for coordinating group effort, eliminating or at least minimizing these selfish individualistic instincts, so that they can help people achieve something as a group, as a team, and compete with other teams rather than with each other.
So if you think your office is really political, what sort of suggestions do you have to how to work within that kind of space?
As an employee, it's very difficult to change that situation. You know, the only way is to move up the ladder, for which you need to play the game, and then try to change things as a manager or as a leader. As a leader, there are things you can do. I mean, you can minimize the influence of the most political people, even replace them if needed, and at the same time put in place new processes that make things more transparent. And, you know, the goal of the leader should be to decrease the extent to which employees perceive the politics, even if there are some politics underlying, you know, most behaviors. And as an employee, it's very difficult, and often people end up staying too long in their jobs coping with politics, thinking that it would always be like that, and that's not necessarily the case. Moving to a different company is the quickest way to fix that.
Can you be apolitical in an organization?
You cannot be apolitical unless you are happy staying where you are, basically. I mean, or unless you work somewhere that is extremely unusual, in that, you know, if it's an organization that is very, very good at measuring and monitoring actual performance and what people are promoted for what they do as opposed to what they seem to be doing. Reality is, in most organizations, most people move up for their ability to suck up to their bosses, for their abilities to play the game and climb up the political hierarchy. So if you're completely apolitical, you will suffer, at least in your career.
So you need to find a little bit of balance of doing the work and trying to, as I started off saying, really focus on getting a good job done, and at the same time, playing the game a little bit.
Absolutely. And the main message here is, if you want to make a difference, you have to move up. If you have to move up in a political organization, you have to play the game. The important thing is then to make that switch and, you know, stop being a Machiavellian game player once you get there, to be more of a kind of altruistic and other-oriented leader.
So it's naive to think that you can just avoid politics.
It's naive, and, you know, the main problem that organizations have is that they often promote the people who are very, very skilled at playing the political game, and most of them, they don't suddenly stop being selfish, narcissistic, Machiavellian once they get there. And so that's why we end up with so many incompetent managers.
Well, Tomas, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Tomas Tramaro is a professor of business psychology at University College London and the author of Confidence, The Surprising Truth About How Much You Need It. He's also the vice president of research at Hogan Assessments. Have you succeeded in putting your office on a couch and psychoanalyzing it? Figured out how to balance workplace politics with your own career? Tell us about it. Send an email to moneytalking@wnyc.org. We'd love to know how you do it. And while you're at it, let us know what type of conversations you'd like to hear about how to survive the workplace. If you haven't already checked us out, we've got a lot more of these kinds of talks with contributors to the Harvard Business Review. You can find them all by subscribing to the Money Talking podcast, available on iTunes. And when you're there, give us a review. It really helps get the word out. I'm Charlie Herman, and this is Money Talking from WNYC.